Chapter 8. For Mushkin, too, that morning began under the influence of painful forebodings. They might be explained by his invalid state, but his sadness was quite indefinite, and that was what made it most distressing to him. It is true that painful, mortifying facts stood vividly before him, but his sadness went beyond everything he remembered, and the reflections that followed that memory. He realized that he could not regain his serenity alone. By degrees, the conviction took root in him that something special, something decisive, would happen to him that very day. His fit of the previous evening had been a slight one. Besides depression and a certain weariness in his head and pain in his limbs, he had nothing the matter with him. His brain worked fairly accurately, though his soul was ill at ease. He got up rather late and at once clearly recalled the previous evening. He remembered, too, though not quite distinctly, how he had been taken home half an hour after the fit. He learnt that a messenger had already been from the Epanchins to ask after his health. At 11:30, another called to inquire, and this pleased him. Vera Lebedev was among the first to visit him and wait upon him. She burst out crying for the first minute when she saw him, but when Mushkin at once reassured her, she began laughing. He was suddenly struck by the girl's deep sympathy for him. He took her hand and kissed it. Vera flushed crimson.
"Ugh! What are you doing?"
she cried, drawing her hand away in dismay. She went away quickly in strange confusion. She had time, though, to tell him, among other things, that her father had run off very early to see the departed, as he persisted in calling the general, to find out whether he had died in the night, and it was reported, so she was told, that he was at the point of death. At 12:00, Lebedev himself came home, and went in to Mushkin, not merely for a minute to inquire after his precious health, and so on, but also to look into the cupboard. He did nothing but sigh and groan, and Mushkin soon dismissed him. Yet he made an attempt to question the prince about his fit the previous evening, though it was evident he knew full details about it already. After him, Kolya ran in, also for a minute. He really was in a hurry, and was in great and painful agitation. He began by directly and insistently begging Mushkin for an explanation of all that they had been concealing from him, asserting that he had learned almost everything the day before. He was deeply and violently distressed. With all possible sympathy, Mushkin told him the whole story, relating the facts with absolute exactness, and it fell like a thunderbolt on the poor boy. He could not utter a word, and wept in silence. Mushkin felt that this was one of those impressions which remain forever, and make a turning point in a young life. He hastened to give him his view of the case, adding that in his opinion the old man's death might principally be due to the horror inspired by his own action, and that not everyone was capable of such a feeling. Kolya's eyes flashed as he listened to Mushkin.
"They were worthless lot, Ganya and Varya and Titsin. I'm not going to quarrel with them, but our paths lie apart from this moment. Oh, Prince, I've had so many new feelings since yesterday. It's a lesson for me. I consider that my mother, too, is entirely my responsibility now, though she's provided for at Varya's. That's not the thing."
He jumped up, remembering that he was expected at home, hurriedly asked after Mushkin's health, and listening to the answer, added in haste,
"Isn't there something else? I heard yesterday, though I've no right, that if you ever want a devoted servant for any purpose, here he is before you. It seems as though we're both of us not quite happy. Isn't that so? But I don't ask anything, I don't ask."
He went away, and Mushkin sank into still deeper brooding. Everyone was predicting misfortune. Everyone had already drawn conclusions. Everyone looked at him as though they knew something, and something he did not know.
Lebedev asks questions. Kolya directly hints at it, and Vera weeps.
At last he dismissed the subject in vexation.
"It's all my accursed sickly oversensitiveness," he thought.
His face brightened when, after 1:00, he saw the Epanchins, who came to visit him for a moment. They really did come only for a moment. When Lizaveta Prokofievna got up from lunch, she announced that they were all going for a walk at once and all together. The announcement was made in the form of a command, dry, abrupt, and unexplained. They all went out, that is, the mother, the girls, and Prince S. Lizaveta Prokofievna turned in a direction exactly opposite to that which they took every day. Everyone understood what it meant, but everyone refrained from speaking for fear of irritating Madame Epanchin, and, as though to escape from reproaches or objections, she walked in front without looking back at them. At last, Adelaida observed that there was no need to race along like that, and that there was no catching Mama up.
"Now then," said Lizaveta Prokofievna, turning suddenly, "we're just passing his door. Whatever Aglaé may think, and whatever may happen afterwards, he is not a stranger, and what's more, now he's in trouble and ill. I shall go to see him anyhow. If any care to come too, they can. If not, you can go on. The way is open."
They all went in, of course. Mushkin very properly hastened to beg forgiveness once more for the vase and the scene.
"Oh, that's no matter," answered Lizaveta Prokofievna. "I don't mind about the vase. I mind about you. So now you're aware yourself that there was a scene last night. That's how it is the morning after. But it's all of no consequence, for everyone sees now that one mustn't be hard on you. Goodbye for the present, though. If you feel strong enough, go for a little walk and then have a nap. That's my advice. And if you feel disposed, come in as usual. Be sure, once for all, that whatever happens, whatever may come, you'll always be our friend. Mine, anyway. I can answer for myself."
All accepted this challenge and confirmed their mother's sentiments. They went out, but in this simple-hearted haste to say something kind and encouraging, there lay hid a great deal that was cruel, of which Lizaveta Prokofievna had no suspicion. In the words "as usual," and "mine at least," there was again an ominous note. Mushkin began to think of Aglaé. It is true that she had given him a wonderful smile on going in, and again on taking leave, but she had not uttered a word, even when the others had all made their protestations of friendship, though she had looked intently at him once or twice. Her face was paler than usual, as though she had slept badly that night. Mushkin made up his mind that he would certainly go to them that evening, as usual, and he looked feverishly at his watch. Vera came in just 3 minutes after the Epanchins had gone.
"Aglaé Ivanovna gave me a message for you just now, in secret, Lyov Nikolaevich," she said.
Mushkin positively trembled.
"A note?"
"No, a message. She'd hardly time for that, even. She begs you earnestly not to be away from home for 1 minute all today, up till 7 o'clock this evening or till 9 o'clock. I couldn't quite hear."
"But why so? What does it mean?"
"I know nothing about it. Only she was very earnest that I should give you the message."
"Did she say very earnest?"
"No, she didn't say that. She just managed to turn round and speak as I luckily ran up to her myself. But I could see from her face whether she was in earnest over it. She looked at me so that she made my heart stop beating."
After asking a few more questions, Mushkin was more agitated than ever, though he succeeded in learning nothing more. When he was left alone, he lay down on the sofa and fell to musing again.
"Perhaps they have a visitor there till 9 o'clock, and she's afraid I may do something silly before visitors again," he thought at last,
and began again impatiently waiting for evening and looking at his watch. But the mystery was solved long before the evening, and the solution also was brought by a visitor, and took the form of a new and agonizing mystery. Just half an hour after the Epanchins' visit, Hippolyte came in to him, so tired and exhausted that, entering without uttering a word, he literally fell, almost unconscious, into an easy chair, and instantly broke into an insufferable cough. He coughed till the blood came. His eyes glittered, and there were hectic flushes on his cheeks. Mushkin murmured something to him, but Hippolyte made no reply, and for a long time could only motion to Mushkin to let him alone. At last he came to himself.
"I'm going,"
he pronounced, with an effort at last, and with a husky voice.
"I'll go with you, if you like," said Mushkin, getting up from his seat and suddenly stopping short, as he recalled that he had been forbidden to leave the house.
Hippolyte laughed.
"I'm not going away from you,"
he went on, continually gasping and coughing.
"On the contrary, I found it necessary to come to you, and about something important, but for which I would not have disturbed you. I'm going over yonder, and this time I believe I really am going. It's all up. I haven't come for sympathy, believe me. I lay down at 10 o'clock today, meaning not to get up again until the time came. But you see, I changed my mind and got up once more to come to you. So you see, I had to.
it grieves me to look at you. You'd better have sent for me instead of troubling to come here.
Well, that's enough. You've expressed your regret and enough to satisfy the requirements of politeness. But I forgot. How are you yourself?
I'm all right. Yesterday I was not quite...
I know, I know. The Chinese vase had the worst of it. I'm sorry I wasn't there. I've come about something. In the first place, I've had the pleasure today of seeing Gavril Ardilionovich in a tryst with Aglaya Ivanovna on the green seat. I was astonished to see how stupid a man can look. I remarked upon it to Aglaya Ivanovna when Gavril Ardilionovich had gone. You seem not to be surprised at anything, Prince,
he added, looking mistrustfully at Mushkin's calm face.
To be surprised at nothing, they say, is a sign of great intelligence. To my mind, it might quite as well be a sign of great stupidity. But I don't mean that for you. Excuse me. I'm very unfortunate in my expressions today.
I knew yesterday that Gavril Ardilionovich... Mushkin broke off, obviously confused, though Ippolit was annoyed at his not being surprised.
You knew it? That's something new. But don't tell me about it. You weren't a witness of the interview today, I suppose.
You saw that I was not there, since you were there yourself.
Oh, you may have been sitting behind a bush somewhere. But I'm glad for your sake, of course, for I was beginning to think that Gavril Ardilionovich was the favourite.
I beg you not to speak of this to me, Ippolit, and in such terms.
Especially since you know all about it already.
You are mistaken. I know hardly anything about it. And Aglaya Ivanovna knows for a fact that I know nothing about it. I knew nothing about their meeting, really. You say there's been a meeting between them? Very well, then. Let us leave the subject.
But how's this? One minute you know, the next you don't. You say, very well, and let us leave it. But look here, don't be so trustful, especially if you don't know anything about it. You are trustful because you don't know anything about it. And do you know what those two, the brother and sister, are scheming for? Perhaps you suspect that. Very well, I'll drop it,
he added, noticing an impatient gesture from Mushkin.
Well, I've come about my own affairs, and I want to explain about it. Damn it all, one can't die without explanations. It's awful how much I explain. Do you care to hear?
Speak, I'm listening.
Then I'm changing my opinion again, though. I'll begin with Ganya all the same. Would you believe it, that I had an appointment at the green seat today, too? I don't want to tell a lie, though. I insisted on an interview myself. I begged for it. I promised to reveal a secret. I don't know whether I came too early. I believe I really was early. But I had no sooner sat down beside Aglaya Ivanovna when I saw Gavril Ardilionovich and Varvara Ardilionovna coming along arm in arm, as though they were out for a walk. They both seemed very much amazed at meeting me. It was so unexpected that they were quite taken aback. Aglaya Ivanovna flushed crimson, and you may not believe it, but she was rather disconcerted, whether because I was there or simply at the sight of Gavril Ardilionovich. You know what a beauty he is. Anyway, she turned crimson and ended it all in a second very absurdly. She got up, answered Gavril Ardilionovich's bow and Varvara Ardilionovna's ingratiating smile, and suddenly rapped out, I've only come to express in person my pleasure at your sincere and friendly feelings, and if I am in need of them, believe me. Then she turned away, and the two went off. I don't know whether like fools or in triumph. Ganya, of course, a fool. He couldn't make out a word, and turned as red as a lobster. He has an extraordinary expression of face sometimes. But Varvara Ardilionovna seemed to understand that they must make their escape as quickly as possible, and that this was quite enough from Aglaya Ivanovna, and she drew her brother away. She's cleverer than he is, and I've no doubt she's triumphant now. I came to Aglaya Ivanovna to make arrangements about a meeting with Nastasia Philipovna.
"'With Nastasia Philipovna!' cried Mushkin.
"'You seem to be losing your indifference and beginning to be surprised.
"'I'm glad that you're ready to be like a human being at last. "'I'll comfort you for that. "'This is what comes of serving a young lady of lofty soul. "'I got a slap in the face from her today.'
"'Morally speaking,' Mushkin could not help asking.
"'Yes, not physically.' I don't think anyone would raise a hand against a creature like me. Even a woman would not strike me now. Even Ganya wouldn't strike me, though I did think he was going to fly at me at one time yesterday. I'll bet you anything I know what you're thinking about now. You're thinking he mustn't be beaten, of course, but he might be smothered with a pillow or a wet cloth in his sleep. In fact, one ought to. It's written on your face that you're thinking that at this very second.
"'I've never thought of such a thing,' Mushkin answered with disgust.
"'I don't know. "'I dreamed last night that I was smothered with a wet cloth by a man. "'I'll tell you who it was. "'Rogozhin. "'What do you think? "'Could a man be smothered with a wet cloth?'
Well, "'I don't know.
"'I've heard that it can be done. "'Very well, we'll drop it. "'Come. "'Why am I a slanderer?' Why did she accuse me of being a slanderer today? And take note, it was after she'd heard every word I had to say, and questioned me too. But that's just like a woman. For her sake, I've got into communication with Rogozhin, an interesting person. In her interests, I have arranged a personal interview with Nastasia Philipovna for her. Was it because I wounded her vanity by hinting that she enjoyed Nastasia Philipovna's leavings? Yes, I did try to impress that upon her all the time in her interest. I don't deny it. I wrote her two letters in that strain, and today, for the third time, at our interview, I began by telling her that it was humiliating for her, though the word leavings wasn't mine but someone else's. At Ganya's, anyway, everybody was saying it, and indeed she repeated it herself. So how can she call me a slanderer? Oh, I see, I see. It's very amusing for you to look at me now, and I bet you're applying those stupid verses to me. And on the gloom of my declining hour, perchance the farewell smile of love may shine.
He went off into an hysterical laugh.
Mark!
He gasped through a fit of coughing.
What a fellow Ganya is. He talks about leavings, and what does he want to take advantage of himself now?
For a long while, Mushkin was silent. He was horror-struck. "'You spoke of an interview with Nastasia Philipovna?' he murmured at last.
"'Hey! Are you really unaware that Aglaya Ivanovna is going to meet Nastasia Philipovna today? And that for that purpose, Nastasia Philipovna has been brought through Rogozhin from Petersburg at an invitation of Aglaya Ivanovna, and by my efforts—' "'is now staying with Rogozhin, where she stayed before, very near you, in the house of that woman, Daria Alexeyevna, a very dubious lady, a friend of hers, and to that very doubtful house, Aglaya Ivanovna is going today to have a friendly conversation with Nastasia Philipovna and to decide various problems. They want to work at arithmetic. Didn't you know it? Honor bright?'
"'That's incredible.'
"'Well, it's all right if it's incredible. "'But how could you know? "'Though this is such a place, "'if a fly buzzes, everyone knows of it. "'But I've warned you, and you may be grateful to me. "'Well, till we meet again. "'In the next world, probably. "'But another thing, though I have been a cad to you, "'because why should I be a loser? "'Kindly tell me that. "'For your advantage, eh?' I've dedicated my confession to her. You didn't know that. And how she received it, too. But anyway, I've not behaved like a cat to her. I've not done her any harm. But she's put me to shame and snubbed me, though I've done you no harm either. If I did refer to leavings and things of that sort, still I am telling you the day and the hour and the address of their meeting, and I've let you into the whole game. From resentment, of course, not from generosity. Goodbye. I'm as talkative as a stammerer or a consumptive. Mind you take steps at once.
if you deserve to be called a man. The interview is to take place this evening. That's the truth.
Ippolit went towards the door, but Mushkin called after him and he stopped in the doorway.
So then, according to you, Aglaya Ivanovna is going herself today to Nastasia Philipovna?
Asked Mushkin. Patches of red came out on his forehead and cheeks.
I don't know for a fact, but that's probably so,
answered Ippolit, looking round.
Yes, it must be so. Nastasia Philipovna couldn't go to her, and it wouldn't be at Ganya's, where there's a man almost dead. What do you think of the general?
He can't be there, if only for that reason, Mushkin put in. How could she get away even if she wanted to? You don't know the habits of the household. She couldn't get away from home alone to see Nastasia Philipovna. It's nonsense.
Look here, Prince. Nobody jumps out of a window, but when the house is on fire, the grandest gentleman or lady is ready to jump out of a window. When it's a case of necessity, there's no help for it. And our young lady will even go to see Nastasia Philipovna. And don't they let them go anywhere, your young ladies?
No, I didn't mean that.
Well, if not, she's only to go down the steps and go straight there, and she needn't ever go home again. There are cases where one may sometimes burn one's ships and not go home again. Life does not consist only of lunches and dinners and princesses. I fancy you take Aglaya Ivanovna for a young lady or a boarding-school miss. Wait till 7 or 8 o'clock. If I were in your place, I'd send someone to be on the watch there to catch the very minute when she comes down the steps. Send Kolya. He'll be delighted to play the spy. Believe me, for your sake, I mean. For everything's relative.
Ippolit went out. Mushkin had no reason for asking anyone to spy for him, even if he'd been capable of doing so. Aglaya's command that he should stay at home was now almost explained. Perhaps she meant to come and fetch him, or perhaps it was that she did not want him to turn up there, and so had told him to stay at home. That might be so, too. His head was in a whirl. The whole room was turning round. He lay down on the sofa and closed his eyes. In either case, it was final, conclusive. Mushkin did not think of Aglaya as a young lady or a boarding-school miss. He felt now that he had been uneasy for a long time, and that it was just something of this kind he had been dreading. But what did she want to see her for? A shiver ran over Mushkin's whole body. He was in a fever again. No, he didn't look on her as a child. He had been horrified by some of her views, some of her sayings of late. He sometimes fancied that she had seemed too reserved, too controlled, and he remembered that this had alarmed him. He had been trying during those days not to think about it. He had dismissed oppressive ideas. But what lay hidden in that soul? The thought had worried him for a long time, though he had faith in that soul. And now all this must be settled and revealed that day. An awful thought. And again, that woman. Why did it always seem to him that that woman was bound to appear at the last moment and tear asunder his fate like a rotten thread? That it had always seemed so, he was ready to swear now, though he was almost delirious. If he had tried to forget her of late, it was simply because he was afraid of her. Did he love that woman, or hate her? He had not put that question to himself once that day. His heart was clear on one point. He knew whom he loved. He was not so much afraid of the meeting of the two, not of the strangeness, not of the unknown cause of that meeting, not of what it might lead to, whatever it might be. He was afraid of Nastasia Philipovna. He remembered a few days later that all through those feverish hours, her eyes, her glance were before him, her words in his ears, strange words, though little remained of them in his memory when those feverish hours of misery were over. He scarcely remembered that Vera had brought him his dinner, that he ate it, and did not know whether he slept after dinner or not. All he knew was that he only began to see things clearly that evening, when Aglaya came towards him on the veranda, and he jumped up from the sofa and went to meet her. It was 7:15. Aglaya was entirely alone, dressed simply, as it seemed hastily, in a light burnous. Her face was pale, as it had been that morning, and her eyes glittered with a dry, hard light. He had never seen such an expression in her eyes. She looked at him attentively.
"You are quite ready,"
she observed quietly, and with apparent composure.
You are dressed and have your hat in your hand. So you've been warned. And I know by whom. Hippolyte?
Yes, he told me, muttered Mushkin, more dead than alive.
Come along. You know that you must escort me there. You are strong enough to go out, I suppose.
I'm strong enough, but is this possible? He broke off instantly and could say no more. This was his one attempt to restrain the mad girl, but after it he followed her like a slave. Confused as his ideas were, he realized that she would certainly go there even without him, and that therefore he was bound to go with her in any case. He divined how strong her determination was. It was beyond him to check this wild impulse. They walked in silence the whole way, scarcely uttering a word. He only noticed that she knew the way well, and when he wanted to go a rather longer way, because the road was more deserted, and suggested this to her, she seemed to listen with strained attention, and answered abruptly,
"It's all the same."
When they had almost reached Darya Alexeyevna's abode, a big old wooden house, there came down the steps a gorgeously dressed lady with a young girl. They both got into an elegant carriage, which stood waiting at the steps, talking and laughing loudly. They did not once glance at the approaching couple, and seemed not to notice them. As soon as the carriage had driven off, the door instantly opened a second time, and Rogozhin, who had been waiting there, admitted Mushkin and Aglaya, and closed the door behind them.
"There's no one in the whole house now, except us four," he observed aloud, and looked strangely at Mushkin.
In the first room they went into, Nastasya Philipovna was waiting. She too was dressed very simply, and all in black. She stood up to greet them, but did not smile or even give Mushkin her hand. Her intent and uneasy eyes were fastened on Aglaya. The two ladies sat at a little distance from one another, Aglaya on a sofa in a corner of the room, Nastasya Philipovna at the window. Mushkin and Rogozhin did not sit down, and she did not invite them to do so. Mushkin looked with perplexity, and, as it were, with pain at Rogozhin, but the latter still wore the same smile. The silence lasted some moments. At length an ominous look passed over Nastasya Philipovna's face. Her gaze grew obstinate, hard, and full of hatred, and it was riveted all the time upon her visitors. Aglaya was evidently confused, but not intimidated. As she walked in, she scarcely looked at her rival, and, for the time, sat with downcast eyes, as though musing. Once or twice she looked, as it were, casually round the room. There was an unmistakable shade of disgust on her face, as though she were afraid of contamination here. She mechanically arranged her dress, and even once restlessly changed her seat, moving to the other end of the sofa. She was hardly perhaps conscious of her actions, but their unconsciousness made them even more insulting. At last she looked resolutely straight into Nastasya Philipovna's face, and read at once all that was revealed in the ominous gleam in her rival's eyes. Woman understood woman. Aglaya shuddered.
"You know, of course, why I asked you to come,"
she brought out at last, but in a very low voice, and pausing once or twice even in this brief sentence.
"No, I know nothing about it,"
Nastasya Philipovna answered, dryly and abruptly. Aglaya flushed. Perhaps it struck her suddenly as strange and incredible that she should be sitting here with that woman, in that woman's house, and hanging upon her answer. At the first sound of Nastasya Philipovna's voice, a sort of shiver ran over her. All this, of course, that woman saw quite clearly.
"You understand everything, but you pretend not to understand on purpose," said Aglaya,
almost in a whisper, looking sullenly at the floor.
"Why should I?"
Nastasya Philipovna smiled.
"You want to take advantage of my position, of my being in your house,"
Aglaya brought out, awkwardly and absurdly.
"You're responsible for your position."
"Not I," said Nastasya Philipovna, suddenly flaring up.
"You're not here at my invitation, but I at yours. I don't know to this hour with what object."
Aglaya raised her head haughtily.
"Restrain your tongue. This is your weapon, and I've not come to fight you with it." "Ah, you have come to fight me, then. Would you believe it? I thought that you were cleverer."
They looked at one another, no longer concealing their spite. One of them was a woman who had lately written those letters to the other.
and now it all fell to pieces at their first meeting, and yet not one of the four persons in the room seemed at that moment to think it strange. Mushkin, who would not the day before have believed in the possibility of it even in a dream, now stood, gazed, and listened, as though he had foreseen this long ago. The most fantastic dream seemed to have changed suddenly into the most vivid and sharply defined reality. One of these women, at that moment, so despised the other, and so keenly desired to express this feeling to her, possibly she had come simply to do so, as Rogojin said next day, that, unaccountable as the other was with her disordered intellect and sick soul, it seemed that no idea she had adopted beforehand could have been maintained against the malignant, purely feminine contempt of her rival. Mushkin felt sure that Nastasia Philipovna would not mention the letters of her own accord. He could guess from her flashing eyes what those letters must be costing her now, and he would have given half his life that Aglaya should not speak of them. But Aglaya seemed suddenly to pull herself together, and instantly mastered herself.
"You misunderstand me," she said. "I have not come here to fight you, though I don't like you. I came to speak to you as one human being to another. When I sent for you, I had already made up my mind what to speak to you about, and I won't depart from that decision now, though you should not understand me at all. That will be the worse for you and not for me. I wanted to answer what you have written to me, and to answer you in person, because I thought it more convenient. Hear my answer to all your letters. I felt sorry for Prince Lyov Nikolaevich from that day when I first made his acquaintance, and heard afterwards what happened at your party. I felt sorry for him, because he is such a simple-hearted man, and in his simplicity believed that he might be happy with a woman of such a character. What I was afraid of for him came to pass. You were incapable of loving him. You tortured him. You tortured him and abandoned him. You could not love him because you were too proud. No, not proud, that's a mistake. But too vain. That's not it either. It's your self-love which amounts almost to madness, of which your letters to me are a proof. You couldn't love a simple-hearted man like him, and very likely you secretly despised him and laughed at him. You can love nothing but your shame, and the continual thought that you've been brought to shame and humiliated. If your shame were less, or you were free from it altogether, you'd be more unhappy." Aglaya enjoyed pronouncing these two rapidly uttered but long-prepared and pondered words, words she had brooded over before she had dreamed of the present interview. With malignant eyes, she watched their effect on Nastasia Philipovna's face, distorted with agitation. "You remember," she went on, "he wrote me a letter then. He says that you know about that letter and have read it, in fact. From that letter I understood it all, and understood it correctly. He confirmed that himself lately. That is, everything I'm telling you, word for word, indeed. After the letter, I waited. I guessed that you were sure to come here, because you can't exist without Petersburg. You are still too young and too good-looking for the provinces. Though, indeed, those are not my words either," she added, blushing hotly, and from that moment the colour did not leave her face till she finished speaking. "When I saw the prince again, I felt dreadfully hurt and wounded on his account. Don't laugh. If you laugh, you're not worthy to understand that." "You see that I'm not laughing," Nastasia Philipovna pronounced sternly and mournfully. "It's nothing to me, though. Laugh as much as you like. When I began to question him, he told me that he had ceased to love you long ago, that even the memory of you was a torture to him, but that he was sorry for you, and that when he thought of you, it always pierced his heart. I have to tell you, too, that I have never in my life met a man like him for noble simplicity and boundless trustfulness. I understood from the way he talked that anyone who chose could deceive him, and that he would forgive anyone afterwards who had deceived him, and that was why I grew to love him." Aglaya paused for a moment, as though amazed, as though hardly able to believe her own ears that she could have uttered such words. But at the same time an infinite pride shone in her eyes. She seemed by now to be beyond caring, even if that woman did laugh at once at the avowal that had broken from her. "I've told you all, and now no doubt you understand what I want of you. Perhaps I do understand. But tell me yourself," Nastasia Philipovna answered softly. There was a glow of anger in Aglaya's face. "I want to learn from you," she pronounced firmly and distinctly, "what right you have to meddle in his feelings for me. By what right you have dared to send me letters?
What right you have to be continually declaring to him and to me that you love him, after abandoning him of your own accord and running away from him in such an insulting and degrading way?
I have never declared either to him or to you that I love him,
Nastasya Philipovna articulated with an effort.
And you are right that I did run away from him,
she added, hardly audibly.
Never declared it to him or to me, cried Aglaya. How about your letters? Who asked you to begin matchmaking, persuading me to marry him? Wasn't that a declaration? Why do you force yourself upon us? I thought at first that you wanted to rouse in me an aversion for him by interfering with us, and so make me give him up. It was only afterwards that I guessed what it meant. You simply imagined that you were doing something wonderful and heroic with all these pretenses. Why? Are you capable of loving him, if you love your vanity so dearly? Why didn't you simply go away from here instead of writing me absurd letters? Why don't you even now marry the generous man who loves you so much that he honours you with the offer of his hand? It's quite clear why. If you marry Rogozhin, what grievance will you have to complain of? You'll have had too much honour done you. Evgeny Pavlovich said that you'd read too much poetry and have had too much education for your position, that you're a blue stocking and live in idleness. Add to that your vanity and one gets the full explanation of you. And don't you live in idleness?
Too hurriedly, too crudely, the contest had reached such an unexpected point. Unexpected indeed, for when Nastasya Philipovna set off for Pavlovsk, she still had dreams of something different, though no doubt her forebodings were rather of ill than good. Aglaya was absolutely carried away by the impulse of the moment, as though she were falling down a precipice and could not resist the dreadful joy of vengeance. It was positively strange for Nastasya Philipovna to see Aglaya like this. She looked at her and seemed as though she could not believe her eyes, and was completely at a loss for the first moment. Whether she were a woman who had read too much poetry, as Yevgeny Pavlovich had said, or simply mad, as Mushkin was convinced, in any case, this woman, though she sometimes behaved with such cynicism and impudence, was really far more modest, soft, and trustful than might have been believed. It's true that she was full of romantic notions, of self-centred dreaminess and capricious fantasy, but yet there was much that was strong and deep in her. Mushkin understood that. There was an expression of suffering in his face. Aglaya noticed this and trembled with hatred.
"How dare you address me like that?"
she said, with indescribable haughtiness, in reply to Nastasya Philipovna's question.
"You must have heard me wrong," said Nastasya Philipovna in surprise. "How have I addressed you? If you wanted to be a respectable woman, why didn't you give up your seducer, Totski, simply, without theatrical scenes?"
Aglaya said suddenly, apropos of nothing.
"What do you know of my position that you dare to judge me?"
said Nastasya Philipovna, trembling and turning terribly white.
"I know that you didn't go to work, but off with a rich man, Rogozhin, to go on posing as a fallen angel. I don't wonder that Totski tried to shoot himself to escape from such a fallen angel."
"Don't!" said Nastasya Philipovna with repulsion, and as though in anguish.
"You understand me about as well as Daria Alexeyevna's housemaid, who was tried in court the other day with her betrothed. She'd have understood better than you."
"Very likely.
A respectable girl who works for a living. Why do you speak with such contempt of a housemaid?"
"I don't feel contempt for work, but for you when you speak of work.
If you wanted to be respectable, you'd have become a washerwoman."
They both got up and gazed with pale faces at each other.
"Aglaya, leave off! It's unjust!" cried Mushkin, like one distraught.
Rogozhin was not smiling now, but was listening with compressed lips and folded arms.
"There! Look at her!" said Nastasya Philipovna, trembling with anger. "Look at this young lady! And I took her for an angel. Have you come to me without a governess, Aglaya Ivanovna? And if you like, I'll tell you at once, directly and plainly, why you came to see me. You were afraid. That's why you came."
"Afraid of you?"
asked Aglaya, beside herself in naive and insulting amazement that this woman dared to speak to her like this.
"Me? Of course. You were afraid of me since you decided to come and see me. You don't despise anyone you're afraid of. And to think that I've respected you up to this very moment. But do you know why you are afraid of me? And what is your chief object now? You wanted to find out for yourself whether he loves you more than me or not, for you're fearfully jealous."
"He has told me that he hates you,"
Aglaya faltered.
"Perhaps. Perhaps I am not worthy of him. Only I think you're lying. He cannot hate me, and he could not have said so. But I am ready to forgive you, seeing the position you're in, though I did think better of you. I thought that you were cleverer, and better looking even. I did indeed. Well, take your treasure. Here he is. He's looking at you. He's quite dazed. Take him, but on condition that you leave this house at once, this very minute.
She dropped into an easy chair and burst into tears. But suddenly there was a light of some new feeling in her face. She looked intently and fixedly at Aglaia and rose from her seat.
But if you like, I'll tell him. I'll order him, do you hear? I've only to tell him, and he'll throw you up at once and stay with me forever and marry me, and you'll have to run home alone. Shall I? Shall I?
She cried like a mad creature, scarcely able to believe that she could be saying such things. Aglaia ran in terror to the door, but stopped at the door and listened.
Shall I send Rogojin away? You thought that I was going to marry Rogojin to please you. Here, in your presence, I shall cry to Rogojin, go away, and say to the prince, do you remember what you promised? Heavens, why have I humiliated myself so before them? Didn't you tell me yourself, prince, that you would follow me whatever happened to me, and would never abandon me, that you love me and forgive me everything and Yes, you said that too. And it was only to set you free that I ran away from you then. But now I don't want to. Why has she treated me like a loose woman? Ask Rogojin whether I'm a loose woman. He'll tell you. Now, when she has covered me with shame and before your eyes too, will you turn away from me also and walk away arm in arm with her? We'll curse you then, for you were the only one I trusted. Go away, Rogojin, you're not wanted,
she went on, hardly knowing what she was doing, bringing the words out with an effort, with a distorted face and parched lips, evidently not believing a syllable of her tirade, and at the same time wishing to prolong the position, if only for a second, and to deceive herself. The outbreak was so violent that it might almost have killed her, so at least it seemed to Mushkin.
Here he is! Look at him! She cried to Aglaia, pointing to Mushkin. If he doesn't come to me at once, if he does not take me and doesn't give you up, take him for yourself. I give him up. I don't want him.
Both she and Aglaia stood, as it were, in suspense, and both gazed like mad creatures at Mushkin. But he, perhaps, did not understand all the force of this challenge. In fact, it's certain that he didn't. He only saw before him the frenzied, despairing face, which, as he had once said to Aglaia, had stabbed his heart forever. He could bear no more, and he turned, appealing and reproachful to Aglaia, pointing to Nastasia Philipovna.
How can you? You see what an unhappy creature she is.
But he could utter nothing more, petrified by the awful look in Aglaia's eyes. That look betrayed such suffering, and at the same time such boundless hatred, that, with a gesture of despair, he cried out and ran to her. But it was already too late. She could not endure even the instant of his hesitation. She hid her face in her hands, cried, "Oh, my God!" and ran out of the room. Rogojin followed to unbolt the street door for her. Mushkin ran too, but he felt himself clutched by two arms in the doorway. The desperate, contorted face of Nastasia Philipovna was gazing fixedly at him, and her blue lips moved, asking,
"You follow her? Her?"
She dropped senseless in his arms. He lifted her up, carried her into the room, laid her in a low chair, and stood over her in blank suspense. There was a glass of water on a little table. Rogojin, coming back, took it up and sprinkled it in her face. She opened her eyes, and for a minute remembered nothing, but suddenly looked round her, started, cried out, and threw herself in Mushkin's arms.
"Mine! Mine!" she cried. "Has the proud young lady gone?"
she cried in hysterics.
"I gave him up to that young lady, and why? What for? I was mad, mad! Get away, Rogojin!"
Rogojin looked at them intently, and did not utter a word, but took his hat and went away. 10 minutes later, Mushkin was sitting by Nastasia Philipovna, with his eyes fastened upon her, stroking her head and cheeks with both hands, as though she were a little child. He sighed in response to her laughter, and was ready to cry at her tears. He said nothing, but listened intently to her broken, excited, incoherent babble. He scarcely took it in, but smiled gently to her, and as soon as he fancied she was beginning to grieve again, or to weep, to reproach him or complain,
He began at once stroking her head again, and tenderly passing his hands over her cheeks, soothing and comforting her like a child.